Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And continuing, of course, our theme of autumn and the fact that we're going to be looking at Halloween coming around the corner. But we're enjoying October. Wondrous month. Sometimes it's warm. Sometimes it's cool. We never know. Sometimes it's sunny. But we're certainly enjoying the changing of the seasons, the changing colors and the trees. And, of course, we saw the sugar maples almost iridescent in some of their oranges and golds. And now the burning bushes are turning with their very vibrant red leaves, with the background of the yellow leaves off of the oak trees. Just beautiful. Very, very colorful autumn this year. Maybe because of the drought, but it's beautiful nonetheless. A little wet. Now we're getting rain. We don't need it as much as we did in the summer, but there you go. A little essay to begin, written by Jack Spadafore, a very talented man from Park Ridge. He entitles his essay, The Masks of October. Jack writes, October is perhaps the most wondrous month of the year in Illinois. The splendors of raw nature, the bracing bite of morning air, the chatter of children, birds, and squirrels readying for winter, and of course, the anticipation of what has lately become our second most loved holiday, Halloween. In our busyness this month, we take these as givens. But take the time to give the givens a second look. When you do, you may see something more going on, especially the different kinds of masks being worn over some hidden truths out there, such as the following. There's the mask of autumn itself, whose astonishing glories often hide from view, keeping the creeping cold and white impotence of another brutal Midwestern winter. The football charm of our sweater weather is secretly prophesying the dark days of our December and January. There are the masks of Halloween, whose fun and furies lately appear to betray our culture's increasing fascination with ghouls, vampires, the demonic, and death. What has traditionally been a day for children has become a subconscious opportunity for restive adults to allay their fears by playing off those very fears in this annual glut of guises. And finally, come the masks that each of us wears daily, this month and every other month of the year, whose disguises not only protect our vulnerabilities from others, but at times may even confuse us into becoming our masks more than ourselves, the sort of transference addressed especially by clergy, psychiatry, and occasionally curious trick-or-treaters. Another October is upon us. Merriment, memories, and masks alike. Now it's for us to make the most of it before this month goes up in the smoke of those burning leaves that once upon a time hung over our October streets like a mystic mist. Very descriptive last sentence, isn't it? Now it's for us to make the most of it before this month goes up in the smoke of those burning leaves that once upon a time hung over our October streets like a mystic mist. Very descriptive from Jack Spadafore. The masks of October. A lot of different masks. In fact, we're going to jump over here. I was looking at something in the newspaper talking about costumes for Halloween this year. The top 10 costumes choices for children and adults this Halloween, according to the National Retail Federation. For children, princess. Doesn't say boy or girl, but princess, Batman, Spider-Man, witch, Disney princess, I guess different than a regular princess, superhero, pirate, vampire, of course, zombie, zombies everywhere, and ghosts. So those are the most popular costumes for children. For adults, witch, vampire, pirate, Batman character, zombie, vixen, princess, nurse, and ghost in a tie, cat, and Superman. The Party City. Of course, Party Cities are everywhere. You can always get a costume over there. But those are the costumes for Halloween coming up. Very interesting. Very interesting. Of course, for Halloween, we have to mention our good friends over at Swirls. Pam Rose, our good pal, because Swirls cupcakes make people happy. Special cupcake for Halloween, now available from October 24th through the 31st. Best to pre-order them because they come all in gluten-free, which is very, very important right now. Gluten-free is very important because a lot of kids have an allergy or have celiac disease and have a necessity to have gluten-free products, or vegan gluten-free, even better, but that has to be pre-ordered. But their chocolate marshmallow, I'm looking at a picture, it's just beautiful. Moist chocolate cake with a fluffy marshmallow center, layer of chocolate ganache, and a two-tone marshmallow buttercream topped with a decorative Halloween chocolate. Only at Swirls, the best cupcake people in Chicago. And they're located at 705 West Belden in Lincoln Park. And you can get information or order on their website, which is www.swirlscupcakes.com, or call them at 773-404-2253. Pam Rose, mention her name. Of course, Pam's a good pal and does a great job. We always have Swirls cupcakes for all of the celebrations at our house, and we'll continue to do so because we have Halloween and we have Thanksgiving. Great for Thanksgiving and Christmas, needless to say, right? Our good pal Peter Guarino at the Shakespeare Project of Chicago has some news coming up. The Shakespeare Project of Chicago announces the first play of its 18th season of free public performances. William Shakespeare's The Tragedy of Othello, The Moor of Venice, will be performed as a theatrical reading at four locations. On Friday, October 26th, an evening performance will be given at the Niles Public Library, 6960 West Oakton in Niles. On Saturday, October 27th, a morning performance begins at 10 at the Newberry Library, 60 West Walton in Chicago. An afternoon performance will be given at 2 at the Wilmette Public Library, 1242 Wilmette Avenue in Wilmette. And on Sunday, October 28th, the performance will be offered at 2 at the Highland Park Public Library, 494 Laurel Avenue in Highland Park. He's going to have a busy weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with two shows on Saturday. What is the nature of pure evil? Why does Iago do the terrible things he does? These questions and the elusive answers to them have confronted audience members ever since Othello, The Moor of Venice, was first performed at Whitehall Palace on November 1st, 1604. Nearly 412 years later, the Shakespeare Project will present the play to open its 18th season of theatrical readings October 26th through the 28th. This is very important. An introduction to the play will be given 15 minutes prior to each performance, and a discussion with the actors, creative team, and audience members will follow the reading. Peter does that so very well, and what a great idea. Go into the play knowing what it's about so you can just enjoy the art of what they're doing in the art of the Elizabethan language. This program is partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, a state agency. The Shakespeare Project of Chicago has been providing free performances of the works of William Shakespeare and other great dramatists to Chicago area audiences since 1995. The project's presentations place an artistic emphasis on the language of the plays and leverage the talents of professional actors, members of Actors Equity Association. The company's educational programs bring the world in words to high schools and universities through abbreviated adaptations of Shakespeare's plays and interactive actor-led workshops. Further information is available at www.shakespeareprojectchicago.org. Very important to see Shakespeare in a different setting. Of course, we enjoy, and we will be enjoying, having a conversation about a play from the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, one of my favorites, Sunday in the Park with George, but the great work that they do, and Barbara Gaines does it, the Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier. But Peter presents his plays merely by enjoying the language, and which is how Shakespeare wants us to be familiarized with Elizabethan English, and he does a terrific job at it, and he's been doing it for many years. Had the opportunity of having Peter on in last season, and we'll have him on again this season. But if you have the opportunity, please do that. Log on to their website, ShakespeareProjectChicago.org, and get some information, because a vital part of culture and arts in the Chicago area, and certainly something that everybody should enjoy seeing and enjoy watching their performance, because it's a lot of fun. Got the latest press releases on the pre-Broadway world premiere of Big Fish, which is coming Broadway in Chicago, April 2nd to May 5th. A new musical of epic proportions. You've seen the movie, and the movie was very interesting. Jekyll and Hyde from Broadway will be playing. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert at the Auditorium Theater. Catch Me If You Can. Remember the movie? It's made into a musical. Anything Goes, one of the classics, with Rachel York will be here. And Potted Potter, which is a musical about Harry Potter, The Unauthorized Experience, a parody by Dan and Jeff will be here. West Side Story is going to come back. American Idiot will be back. So a lot of great theater in Chicago, something to look forward to, Broadway in Chicago, as is started. Kinky Boots started the other night, and here we have it, enjoying the musical of Harvey Fierstein. So. And Cyndi Lauper, so it should be a lot of fun. I told, when I was talking to our friends at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, as I mentioned a little earlier, Barbara Gaines, we were going to do a month of Sondheim. And, of course, Sunday in the Park with George is now being presented down at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, Navy Pier. What a terrific evening in the theater. What a terrific show. And one of the great musicals by Sondheim, amongst the many musicals he's done, of course. And last week we had the actress who portrayed Dot, Carmen Cusack, on our show. And today we're going to have Jason Danely, who portrays George Surratt. And hopefully next week we'll have Kevin Goodall, who is also one of the great actors in Chicago, who will be on the show. And he is in Sunday in the Park with George. But should be a lot of fun to continue our conversation of Stephen Sondheim, George Surratt, and Sunday on the Isle of La Grande Jatte. Little music from Frank Sinatra as he sings about love, from his CD, The Heart of the Matter, written by Nelson Riddle. Kind of a song, kind of the lilting loneliness of desperate heartbreak, one of his classics, in the wee small hours of the morning. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the girl, and never ever think of calm. When your lonely heart has learned its lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her of all. has learned its lesson. You'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her most.
Frank Sinatra, one of the classics in the wee small hours of the morning. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. The challenge, as the artist will proceed to explain in the luminous Stephen Sondheim, James Lapine musical Sunday in the Park with George, is to bring order to the whole, to transform a blank slate into a painting in which color, design, tension, balance, and harmony coalesce, and in which tiny individual dots of paint unite in the human eye and transmit delight to the heart and mind. Just what is involved in that mysterious transformative process and the equally enigmatic process of human relationships is the subject of this extraordinarily sophisticated and impassioned Pulitzer Prize-winning musical. First produced on Broadway in 1985, it now receiving a most intelligent and sensitive revival at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier by award-winning director Gary Griffin. Chicago Shakespeare Theater opens the 2012-2013 season with the Tony Award and Pulitzer Prize-winning musical Sunday in the Park with George, now through November 4th. The celebrated Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine musical is staged by Chicago Shakespeare Theater Associate Artistic Director Gary Griffin in Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Courtyard Theater. The production features Jason Danley, recently seen on Broadway as Dan in the musical Next to Normal, and Carmen Cusack, known to Chicago audiences through her role as Elphaba in the Broadway tour of Wicked. I think of this project as a celebration of the home of Seurat, Sondheim, and Shakespeare, said Griffin. I am thrilled to be welcoming two dynamic musical theater artists, Jason Danley and Carmen Cusack, whose work I have long admired, alongside the excellent ensemble of artists who I've had the pleasure of working with in Chicago for many years. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning actor and singer, having appeared in such musical theater classics as Phantom of the Opera, Hair, Brigadoon, South Pacific, and Carousel. Broadway performer, most recently seen in Next to Normal, The Full Monty, and Curtains. Concert performer and cabaret vocalist with his bride, Marin Mazzi. Recording artist, one of the brightest young stars in musical theater, and now starring as the legendary painter, George Seurat, in the Stephen Sondheim classic Sunday in the Park with George through November 4th at Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier. Mr. Jason Danley. Jason, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and the best way to start is thank you for such a wonderful experience in the theater.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. We're having a fantastic time putting on this incredible piece of theater, each and every performance.
Well, I think that's the best way to describe it. Incredible. It is incredible to watch. It's incredible to see what you and we had the opportunity of Carmen on the show last week, and everybody in the ensemble does, and it looks like you guys are having fun doing it.
We are, as involved and emotional as it is. It's such a richly satisfying and gratifying piece of art to immerse myself in every performance. And just to go along with what you said, this is an incredible ensemble of Chicago actors. I'm very grateful to be welcomed into their company because they're so fantastic. Each and every person is alive and vibrant, even through the whole company.
Well, I imagine, Jason, it gives you an opportunity to exercise all your talents in that singing and acting and going from generation to generation and be able to kind of live that life that spans 100 years.
It really is. It's an incredible gift of a role. It's a role of a lifetime, really. You get to play a plethora and of emotional moments. You get to portray a couple of dogs in the painting. So you get to be funny. You get to the vocal range that Steve wrote is incredibly wide. And yes, it really does get to push the boundaries of what I'm able to do. And it's great to have this opportunity at such a wonderful theater with the production values being so high that I feel completely supported to step out on that sort of edge and ledge every performance.
You know, it's funny. I've seen it so many times, Jason, yet I pick up something new each time, and this time I finally found out that was a waffle maker in the back of the in the picture. That's what that was.
Yeah, I think that's one of the beautiful things and one of the fun things. I've visited the painting three times twice during the run of the performance, and to go see the actual painting. And I went with my wife this last time, 2 weeks ago, right after we opened, and to look at these characters in the painting and think about how fun it was for Steve and James to stand in front of this painting and say, okay, the boatman is going to have this story and this person's going to have this story, and create a real through line for all these characters, and then to say, what is that thing behind those girls? Well, let's make it a waffle. Let's make it Louie's waffle stove. Oh, and then there's just another dot connected in this giant patchwork.
You know, it's 10 foot across, 7 foot high. It's almost defies dimension when you look at this and say, "How does that guy do that?"
You see how it did take him 2 years
sure.
plus to work on to finish that painting.
You know, the as I was driving to the studio, I'm thinking about our conversation, and I'm thinking about Dot, and I'm thinking about the second act, and I'm thinking about, well, here's Seurat, who's a man who painted with pointillism. That was his type of artistic expression, and it was like connecting the dots, mm-hmm. yet he had a hard time connecting to Dot herself, mm-hmm. and in the second act, he's trying to connect with art and trying to sell his art. So there's a lot of connectivity going on in this musical.
Yeah, I think one of the beautiful things about Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine's combined work, and not just this, but many of their musicals, that throughout my life, it means different things at different times. I connect to it, to use that phrase, in a different way. And each time I visit a song or a story, and it's interesting to finally be in a production of it. And Gary Griffin, our director, was so thorough in wanting to, we both wanted to do this, make the first act and the second act feel like one cohesive piece, because of course it was conceived that way, but sometimes it's not perceived as that, because it's in two different, it's 100 years difference between Act One and Act Two. And the idea of George Seurat in the first act being the artist who is completely consumed by his art, that he can't connect to the outside world. Mm-hmm. He's sort of self-isolating himself because he's completely immersed in what that world is. And that in Act Two, we see George, contemporary George, having had his success in his art, but now he's on the other side of it. And the commerce part, the moving and shaking and the raising funds to continue to do what you love and are passionate about, it shows the other sort of a mirror image, opposite side of what it is to be an artist. And that George is one continuous George arc, and that audience hopefully sees that at the end he's able to communicate and be re-inspired and re-immersed in his art in the blank page metaphor, white, a blank page, his favorite. So many possibilities that it is hopefully for the audience, a full story.
You know, and if you pay attention, and I don't think you could get it the first time. If you just see it for one time, I don't think, Jason, you can pick it all up, because there's such substance there. When you say, you let the eye, as you're talking, I think you're talking to Jules, let your eye mix the colors on the canvas, not let the painter mix the colors on the palette and then paint it onto the canvas. I heard a definition of impressionism is that which the eye sees, not what the mind knows. You know, we see a group of flowers, and classical painting would paint each flower. Well, impressionists, you have to step back to see all of the flowers, and then that's what you're looking at, that blend as they coalesce, and that's part of this story.
Yes, and I've just recently have sort of discovered through that scene specifically. What I think Steve and James were talking about themselves, particularly Steve Sondheim's music has been perceived in various ways by a variety of people, and often perceived as maybe unmelodic. Oh, you can't walk out humming a tune, or
right.
You can't this, or it's too sophisticated, and I can't understand it. And the scene that you were speaking of, where George is describing how your eye perceives both the red and the blue in the flower and the hat, but also when you step back and look at it, it changes,
right.
And you see the violet. And I can just, I mean, at least I'm imagining. I won't put any words into either of their mouths of that. This is probably a parallel to their work, but when you step back, when you immerse yourself into Sunday in the Park with George, you see all these complicated moments, these dots, these points, and then when you step back and let it wash you over the course of the evening, that it really does have a different vision or feeling, if you will. It's a complete picture when you step back from it a bit.
And that's very true. And you've been in such great musicals as Phantom and Here and Brigadoon and South Pacific. And I used this example before. You remember things in the theater, musical theater, Jason, that just stick with you, that you remember for years and years and you refer back to. And I remember the introduction, the opening sequence of The Lion King when all the animals are marching into the theater and you hear the music. I mean, it gives you goosebumps. The same thing happened to me, and I'm sure a lot of the audience members, at the end of the first act when all of those characters are coming onto the canvas and you are directing them, and it's that finale at the end. You get goosebumps thinking about that, and you do remember that, and you do hum that as you're going home afterwards,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it Phantom, the same way. End of the first act when the chandelier comes down. You remember those things, you know?
Yes, and I think for me, more specifically, that moment in Sunday, the end of it, because of how it builds to this sort of perfect ending of an act, even a perfect ending of a show, if it were to be the end of the show, that all of his journey and the strum and drang that he's going through with giving up his relationship, his personal life, in order to continue. He has a focus and a goal, and he's sort of abandoned what most people would perceive as a fulfilling life with communicating out with human beings, having a love, having a child, because this is all everything for him. And when you see it all coming together, him moving these characters into this final tableau, and then the finished product flying in from the high space that we have here at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, it's quite thrilling, I think.
Well, it's thrilling for all of us. How you enjoying Chicago?
I'm not seeing a whole lot of Chicago other than from my window in my apartment. It's one of those roles that... you know, on two show days, I'm just at the theater all day, and I'm not talking a whole lot. And all I see is between here and the theater, walking to the theater. You know, I had the honor of being here earlier this year, this summer in July, sing with the Grant Park Symphony,
mm-hmm.
And so I've spent some time here this year, and the little bit that I have been able to get out, I'm enjoying it tremendously.
Well, it's certainly fun for us, certainly fun for to come to Chicago Shakespeare Theater, one of the great gems here in Chicago, and enjoying everything that Barbara Gaines does, and certainly enjoy the work that you and Carmen and all the cast is doing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an incredible journey, and I'm happy to say that I heard you mention that we're running through November 4th, but we have been now extended until November 11th, so I'll have an extra week of getting to explore Chicago a little bit.
I didn't get that press release, but I'm certainly happy about it. I hope it goes to December 11th. Right? A blank page or canvas full of possibilities to which the artist brings order, design, tension, light, composition, symmetry, tone, balance, and harmony. Sunday in the Park is a musical sketch of how an artist makes his art, the way he sees the world, rearranges it, and captures his vision for eternity, often at the price of emotional connection with people. Sondheim's work makes you think, talk, and ponder adult emotions and the important elements of human relationships. Chicago Shakespeare Theater opens the 2012-2013 season with the Tony Award and Pulitzer Prize-winning musical Sunday in the Park with George, now through November 11th. The celebrated Stephen Sondheim James Lapine musical is staged by Chicago Shakespeare Theater Associate Artistic Director Gary Griffin in Chicago Shakespeare's Courtyard Theater. And on the line with us right now is the star of Sunday in the Park with George, Jason Danley. Jason, I'm going to give a phone number for people if they'd like tickets. Of course, 312-595-5600. I'd say run to the theater to get tickets because it's great. Thank you for taking a little time. And I know you're busy, but enjoy Chicago as much as you can. And come back and visit us, will you?
Oh, it would be a privilege to come back here anytime. And thank you so much, Kevin.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jason.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Jason Danley, one of the great stars of musical theater, certainly doing just a wondrous job at Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Sunday in the Park with George. I can't say enough about it, it's just a wonderful experience in the theater. Take the young ones, not too young, but take the young ones, certainly high school and college, and enjoy some of the great talents of Stephen Sondheim and the people who inhabit his beautiful world of George Surratt's painting Sunday on the Island of Grand Jatte, which is in the Art Institute of Chicago. Thursday and Friday nights just got a whole lot more fun for Chicago families now that Chicago Children's Theater has happily moved into its first ever permanent home, the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, 1016 North Dearborn. Itinerant no longer, Chicago Children's Theater is expanding its performance schedule and adding new value-added family-friendly evening show times for Harold and the Purple Crayon. The company's inaugural show as a resident company at the Ruth Page through November 4th. Meet Harold, a curious 4-year-old boy who, armed with his trusty purple crayon, has the power to create a world of his own simply by drawing it. When Harold wants to go on a walk in the moonlight, he finds there is no moon. So Harold draws one. When he has nowhere to walk, Harold draws his own path. Along the way, he encounters dangerous dragons, embarks on a perilous sea voyage in a trim little boat, takes a hot air balloon ride, and enjoys a 9-pie picnic, just a few of his many adventures as Harold tries to draw himself back to his own bedroom. This imaginative musical uses breathtaking animation, inventive puppetry, video projections, and live original music to bring Harold's purple-hued world to life. Perfect for introducing young children to theater while simultaneously captivating their older companions. Harold and the Purple Crayon will amaze, delight, and entertain while teaching youngsters that anything is possible with a crayon and a big imagination. For families, an evening of theater is much more than the actual show. It needs to be a complete experience, said Jackie Russell, co-founder and artistic director of Chicago Children's Theater. Parents need to know where to eat and where to park. Having one convenient, consistent destination for all of our shows will help us build our audience base and help families make taking their kids to see live theater a fun, easy, and familiar family ritual. And in line with us right now is the award-winning director, nationally recognized leader in the venue of children's theater and programming, teacher, mentor, one of the brightest and most visionary members of Chicago's theatrical community, and the founder and artistic director of Chicago Children's Theater, now presenting Harold and the Purple Crayon at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, the new home of the Chicago Children's Theater, 1016 North Dearborn, through November 4th, our good pal, Jackie Russell. Jackie, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hello. Thank you for having me back.
Always a pleasure, and congratulations on your new crib.
Yay, thank you. We're loving it. Thank you.
Well, what a great way to start. And, you know, you always come up with such great ideas. Harold and the Purple Crayon, but you have paper everywhere, and the kids can draw, and they can paint on the walls, and they can do all bunch of stuff. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we like to joke that we just moved in and we're already coloring on the wall. We've really tried to create a total family experience there, and we want kids to feel welcome, and we want them to have a memorable experience every time they come to the theater. So not only do we want them to see great, top-rate, quality theater, but we also want them to really feel like it's their theater. And one of the ways that we're doing it with this show is covering the walls with big white butcher block paper and giving every child that comes into that theater a purple crayon and just letting them go at it and color with us.
You know, what a great idea, and what a great, and we've talked about this many times before, but this is our next generation of the theater goer. And if those kids can come into the theater and feel comfortable and have a longing for it and go to their parents or their teachers or their grandparents and say, can we go to the theater? Can we do this? They look forward to it, and that is a way to instruct them as time goes on, as they age and get older.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because I one of my favorite things to do in this job is to sit in the audience and listen to the children around me. And in this show in particular, the kids have just been so vocal about how much they love this experience. I heard one adorable little girl on a field trip just jumping up and down and just kind of to the air said, "I'm loving this." Another little girl on opening night turned to her mother like about midway through the show and said, "This is so worth it." Another child was leaving a field trip last Friday, and he saw me and he asked where he could get the DVD. He really wanted to see it again.
Well, you better start filming this then.
Yeah, right. I mean, to me, those kids are definitely sold on this whole idea
sure.
of live theater. And
sure.
So, you know, it's so rewarding, and it is so exciting for us in this profession to feel like we are absolutely building our audiences for the future.
And I'm sure you've seen it because you've made a study of it in your career, that a lot of the reason that the young ones don't come to the theater is because the parents are somewhat or have been somewhat intimidated by going to the theater, so they don't feel comfortable there.
Yes, I think that there's a lot about theater that is you know, challenging for people these days, where we can kind of program everything, you know, when and where we want to do it, you know, the times of the DVR and the iPod, and, you know, so we kind of do things whenever we want. And so theater happens at a certain time, and you need to be there, and it starts. And I think that that's partially why we're really trying to create an experience that is a total experience, so that it is really meaningful, because it's a big commitment for people to say, yeah, we're going to commit to doing this. We're going to go to the theater, and we're going to go as a family. And, yeah, I mean, and to be able to feel like you can go and your kids can jump up and down and respond to things and be themselves, I think is really kind of a relief for parents. And then they get to have a good time, too.
You know, what a better way to spend a family time together than to come to the theater and enjoy that. And of course, Thursday is a new Friday because you have pizza party nights.
Yes, and we not only have pizza, we have Peace Pizza, P-I-E-C-E Pizza, which is just the best pizza in Chicago as far as I'm concerned, and they are sponsoring those nights for us, so we've got pizza and we've got Izzy drinks, and we're encouraging families to come at 5:30 so that we can have a nice little dinner before the theater experience, and so it's kind of dinner theater, so to speak. I remember those days of dinner.
Yeah, I do. I was thinking end of round is what I was thinking of. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. So we're redefining dinner theater. And, you know, it's great because we are just now offering Thursday nights, and most of those performances are already half full. And that's pretty amazing, considering that, you know, Thursday nights, you know, it's kind of a new thing for us.
Sure,
so.
Sure. And you start the theater at 6:30, which is nice because in an hour the kids can be heading home.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this show runs just a little under an hour. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect evening, and they'll be ready to go right to bed.
But not to forget Friday nights, because Friday nights are pajama party nights.
Exactly. So you'll stay up a little bit later on Friday night with us, because we'll start the show at 6:30, but then we have a post-show party with the cast, and we have craft activities led by Wishcraft workshops. And so the kids will come down to the party room and get to make things and spend more time at the theater in their pajamas and take pictures. Last year we did this with Goodnight Moon, and we actually had lots of slumber parties coming. So it was really pretty fun.
Well, and that's another way to spend those parties for the kids, just being a whole group over there, and certainly they'll be occupied and certainly have a safe place to be and to enjoy a little time with the whole group together.
Yes, these were some very smart parents who figured that out early, and they made a whole party of it, and it was the kids had a fabulous time.
Well, of course, you're sitting there, as you said earlier, and the kids are commenting on how much they're enjoying coming to the theater and so forth. It must be great gratification for you Jackie, to see what you've accomplished over the short period of time that Chicago Children's Theater has been in existence and where it is now, you know, the struggles that you've had in the past, yet each year exponentially was bigger and better than the last, and as you grew, there was more support, and certainly the quality of programming is second to none.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That really means a lot, because that is really our goal here. And, you know, our mission is to provide top quality theater for the families and children of Chicago, and we feel like we're now really hitting our stride, and people are recognizing that is what we're about. I think that they are responding to our brand, and we're really seeing families coming back again and again. And I think that, you know, while when we started the company, we were really supported by a few who saw the vision, I think now we're really sharing that vision with all of Chicago. And now I think the families themselves that are benefiting from this are starting to embrace it. And that's pretty exciting. I mean, we have our big annual fundraiser, Making a Scene, coming up on November 9th, and we've already sold out all of our tables. So we only have single tickets available now. And that's incredible. That's a first for us, and I think it just really shows you that we are growing roots in this city.
Well, and you say in the city, but it's not limited to that, because not only are you going to be at the Ruth Page, but you're going to be coming up to the Beverly Arts Center November 7th through 11th, and then go up to North Shore for the Performing Arts on November 14th to 18th. So you're spreading your wings quite a bit.
Yes, we really are. We're taking Harold on the road, and we do have lots of friends and fans already up at North Shore in Skokie. This will be our third time there. We were there last year with the Houdini Box, and the year before that we were there with the 100 Dresses, and we found that there's a whole great neighborhood of friends and families up there. And then this year, for the first time, we'll be going to the Beverly Arts Center, and we know that there are just loads of families and children that we would love to reach and entertain and educate down in the Beverly neighborhood.
Well, that's my old neighborhood, and certainly a lot of Southsiders I'll talk it up, and certainly a lot of people love to enjoy that.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. Yeah, there's nothing like getting your show on the road.
Chicago Children's Theater focuses on the production of first-rate children's theater in Chicago with top writing, performing, and directorial talent and high-quality design and production expertise. Chicago Children's Theater aspires to enrich our community through diverse and significant theatrical and educational programming that engages and inspires the child in all of us. Thursday and Friday nights just got a whole lot more fun for Chicago families now that Chicago Children's Theater has happily moved to its first-ever permanent home, the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, 1016 North Dearborn. Itinerant no longer, Chicago Children's Theater is expanding its performance schedule and adding new value-added family-friendly evening showtimes for Harold and the Purple Crayon, the company's inaugural show as a resident company at the Ruth Page through November 4th. And on the line with us right now is the artistic director and founder of Chicago Children's Theater, our good friend Jackie Russell. Jackie, maybe a phone number, website, if people get some information?
Well, people should definitely go to our website, and that is chicagochildrenstheater.org, and we spell theater with an R-E, not an E-R.
The way it should be spelled.
Yeah, there you go. So you can definitely find us there, and you can click anywhere you want for tickets on our site, and you can purchase tickets for any of our locations that way. And so it will direct you to how to do that. And we hope that everybody will go online, and you can also check out photos and see what's up, and also look at a calendar of all of our events as well.
Harold and the Purple Crayon. Always a pleasure, kiddo. Let's keep on each other's radar. I know Jake Kelly will be doing that so well for us, and anything we can do, let us know.
That's terrific. Thanks so much for having me on the show today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jackie. Jackie Russell, the artistic director and founder of Chicago Children's Theater. What a terrific job she does to bring kids into the theater, introduce them to this great art form. And thank goodness she's doing that. For information, 773-871-3000. I always enjoy chatting with my next very special guest, Giordano Dance Chicago, formerly known as Giordano Jazz Dance Chicago, premieres G-Force by Autumn Ekman in fall engagement at the Harris Theater through October 27th, part of Giordano Dance Chicago's 50th anniversary season programming. Giordano Jazz Dance Chicago, as part of their 50th anniversary season programming, premieres Autumn Ekman's exciting new work, G-Force, in their fall 2012 engagement at the Harris Theater, 205 East Randolph, October 26th through the 27th at 8 o'clock. This new piece for two quartets of dancers set to a rousing electronica score is inspired by the physical principle of G-force, the force of acceleration on a body in motion. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning businessman, advocate for Chicago's performing arts community, professional dancer, musician, arts administrator, dance educator, board member, and arts patron, Peace Corps volunteer, degreed geologist, entrepreneur, marketing professional, a person sincerely dedicated in sharing his love for the arts with others, and the executive director of Giordano Dance Chicago, now presenting their fall engagement, G-Force, at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, Friday, October 26th. And Saturday, October 27th at 8, 205 East Randolph, Chicago's Millennium Park, our good pal, Mr. Michael McStraw. Michael, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Well, Kevin, thank you. It's so nice to be back.
I'm going to try not to say jazz in there, but I might slip up here a little bit. But nonetheless, Giordano Dance Chicago, one of the great dance companies in Chicago and across the nation and certainly in the world. And you got some gravity going here on October 27th and 20th.
We do have some gravity going. We absolutely do. You know, you've spoken about our new work from Autumn Ekman called G-Force, which is the physical principle of the acceleration on a body in motion. And it could not be a more fitting description of what this work is. Autumn has now choreographed 7 works for us as our resident choreographer, and this one just continues her wonderful body of work. It's for 2 quartets of dancers, and they have wonderful interplay, and it's a very kind of earthy, funky kind of movement vocabulary that she uses, which matches the energy of the electronica score. But it's crafted with ins and outs and ups and downs that really plays into the idea of energy on something that's moving.
You know, but everything you do has G-force connected with it. I mean, if there's any energy, I mean, Giordano Dance Chicago, you never come out. You come out. You're not even dancing. You come out exhausted watching it.
Well, you know, that's one of the hallmarks of this organization, Kevin, is that we are high energy, high impact dance, and we promise to connect with our audience. Nan Giordano, in her decades here at the helm with the organization, has always said, I want people to leave the theater having been uplifted, having been energized, and hungry for more. And we certainly take that to heart. Our dancers are known for that energy, and it is just an incredible thing to witness.
When, you know, as you're saying this, I'm just thinking, Michael, there are probably some dancers which would not fit into Giordano Dance Chicago, and there's some that would fit in better at another dance company, only because of that energy that's needed to get the point across on what Giordano's trying to do.
That's absolutely true, Kevin. You know, when we audition, which is twice a year, once in New York City and once here in Chicago, we turn away a lot of technically proficient dancers because they don't have that approach to our aesthetic. And also, one of the things that's critical about our organization is that our dancers must have soul. They must have spirit. They must be able to not only show that kinetic energy, but also a passion and a connection with the audience. It's something that's very important. So, yes, sometimes we do turn away technically proficient dancers who are better suited for other organizations and take those people with that same level of passion and commitment.
An interesting point you make, Michael, because passion is something that cannot be taught. You either have it or you don't have it.
It's true.
And it comes not only from that individual, but becomes from the leadership, like yourself, like Nan, like Amy, the people that are involved, like Mr. Giordano many years ago. Bringing that down, those are the type of people that fit into this template of Giordano 50 years later, and it's the same way. You have the opportunity to go to a lot of theater, and sometimes you kind of know when the actor or actress is kind of, what do they call it, kind of phoning it in, you know? And that's not the case here, because you can tell that the performers have that energy, and you know, you have one opportunity to connect to that audience. That's when, at that particular time, they're in the theater, and you do that so very well.
It's true. You know, we have at the core of our mission to enrich lives through dance, and we believe that the way to do that is to give people joy and to bring them in and be part of what we're presenting. It does extend to what happens in the office as well. You know, the arts are not an easy life. They're not an easy life administratively, and they're not an easy life sometimes on the stage because of all the physical demands. But what distinguishes us is our approach to finding the joy and delivering the joy back to our audience members or our funders or other patrons, because we are so committed to what it is we do on all parts of the organization.
Now, Autumn will also be performing in one of the pieces.
She will. Isn't that an extraordinary
thing? It really is. Jeez.
You know, because, Kevin, this is our 50th anniversary season, Nan really looked for choreographic voices and choreographic presence and performing presence that tied to who we are historically, as well as bringing us into our next 50 years. So it's particularly wonderful that Autumn Ekman, who had come up through the ranks, first as an apprentice and then a company member, then she went and worked with other organizations, and now she's come back to us as artistic associate. She runs our second company, our G2s, and our resident choreographer. How wonderful to have her on stage performing. But take that one step farther. How wonderful to have her performing a work from Gus Giordano himself,
sure,
from 1978. I actually saw it in rehearsal today, and it brought me to tears.
Boy. You know, I'm looking at the press release that our good friend Ann Fink sent, and I'm looking at the various works, Sidecar, Le Grand Futur is here. I don't see Michael McStraw in any of these.
I'm the guy who gets on the stage at the beginning and welcomes everybody. That's my performance after.
Okay, so you're going to be talking. You won't be dancing, is what you say.
I welcome people and ask them to sit back and have a good time.
They certainly will. Four full company works, Mark Swanhart's Sidecar, the dynamic Le Grand Futur is here, Mia Michaels, Ekman's, of course, High Energy Jolt, and Del Dominguez, Sabroso, Cha-Cha.
Co-choreographed by Del Dominguez and Laura Flores. They are a ballroom competitive couple here in Chicago, Mixed Motion Arts, and they have been a wonderful addition to our creative team. Nan had worked with them to help fuse the ballroom aesthetic with the concert dance aesthetic, and Sabroso, which means delicious, is absolutely that. It's a visual smorgasbord of different Latin flavors, and it's a delight.
People like that music now. It's becoming more popular, is it not, Michael?
Oh, it absolutely is. Well, you have music that has soul and it has vibrance, and it wants you to get up and move. That's like us.
I wish I could do that. I wish I could dance like that. If I come over there, you think Nan would teach me how to dance like that?
I bet.
I'd like to try
it. One lesson. There we go.
Well, we got 50 years under our belt. What's in store? We're not going to be around, but 50, what are we going to do for the next year, for the next decade? Where are we heading?
It is an extraordinary time for this organization. We have moved from our longstanding base in Evanston into new home and new opportunities here in Chicago.
Hey, congratulations on that, Fine Arts Building. Yeah.
We have started teaching classes as part of the American Rhythm Center at the Fine Arts Building, and we've changed our name, as you had pointed out. We had removed the word jazz from our name, so we're now Giordano Dance Chicago. Simpler. And a more fitting of what it is that we are. We, of course, are the original jazz dance company, but we found that the word jazz sometimes confused patrons or presenters who thought they were going to come to a concert and hear us perform to Miles Davis or Sarah Vaughan only, when in fact it's the art form of jazz dance that was the need for the word jazz. But we've kind of simplified things and moved into our 50th anniversary season with all this excitement. But you asked the question about where to next. We have such energy around this organization and such choreographic possibility that we continue. We actually have our sights set on our 51st year, so that we made sure we got through all the celebration and we're still moving forward. But you will continue to see high energy, high impact dance with a wonderful array of choreographic presence from around the world. And we will make certain that when you come to our concerts, you will enjoy and you will be back.
No doubt about it. October 26th and 27th. Make sure you're down at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, because you'll come in with energy. You'll go out with more. Giordano Dance Chicago, currently under the leadership of Artistic Director Nan Giordano and Executive Director Michael McStraw, is a world-class dance company and driving force in Chicago's thriving performing arts community. The company's new works continually expand the boundaries of jazz and contemporary dance. The company also has an active outreach and education program in three Chicago public high schools. Giordano Dance Chicago celebrates its 50th anniversary with its 2012-2013 season. Giordano Dance Chicago is not only one of the longest-running professional dance companies in Chicago, but few dance companies in the U.S. have achieved this milestone. Early this year, after 50 years in Evanston, Giordano Dance Chicago moved its rehearsal, teaching space, and administrative office into the heart of downtown Chicago. Giordano Dance Chicago is part of their 50th anniversary season program. Premieres Autumn Eckman's exciting new work, G-Force, in their fall 2012 engagement at the Harris Theater, 205 East Randolph, October 26th through the 27th at 8 p.m. This new piece for two quartets of dancers set to a rousing electronica score is inspired by the physical principle of G-force, the force of acceleration on a body in motion. And on the line with us right now is the executive director of Giordano Dance Chicago, our good pal Michael McStraw. Michael, maybe a phone number or website if people like to get some information?
Certainly. I would encourage people to call the Harris Theater box office at 312-334-7777. Easy enough to remember. Or they can always go to harristheaterchicago.org to get tickets to the event.
Always a pleasure, my pal. Would you give Nan our best, and of course for everyone, and myself included, who will be there on the 26th or the 27th? You will be the one talking, not dancing.
That's correct. Thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure to be on your
pleasure
show.
Is mine. Thank you, my pal.
Okay, take care.
Michael McStraw, the executive director of Giordano Dance Chicago. What a fine gentleman, as is everybody. And as we said before, oh, a lot of energy. A lot of energy. As you can see, the passion that he brings to Giordano Dance Chicago and Nan and her whole family. And God bless old Mr. Giordano for doing what he did. But October 26th and 27th at 8 o'clock, 205 East Randolph, Millennium Park. For information, 312-334-7777. You know, when I mentioned this, I got a press release from our good pal Elias Martin over at the Floating World Gallery, which is located in 1925 North Halsted in Lincoln Park in the DePaul area. The Floating World Gallery's free seminar series continues with a break from the past, the Sosaka Hanga movement, Japan's early 20th century print movement explored. Sosaka Hanga was one of two great artistic movements that emerged in 20th century Japanese printmaking, taking root in the late Meiji period. Proponents sought to cast off the traditional collaborative process of making woodblock prints and celebrated the woodblock artist as the sole originator and producer of artistic expression. Sosaka Hanga artists designed, carved, and printed their work entirely themselves. Printmaking was no longer seen merely as a means to duplicate an image, but rather as a vital form of expression for the artist. Floating World Gallery will discuss the work created by these Sosaka Hanga artists in the seminar A Break from the Past, the Sosaka Hanga Movement, on Saturday, October 27th from 1 to 3. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Jason Danley, who does just a remarkable job portraying George Surratt in Stephen Sondheim's classic musical Sunday in the Park with George, of course, the personification of the great painting that hangs in the Art Institute, Sunday in the Island of Le Grand Jatte, the pointillist artist George Surratt. At Chicago Shakespeare Theater, good to hear that it's been extended to November 11th at Navy Pier. For information, 312-595-5600. Our good friend Jackie Russell, the founder and artistic director of Chicago Children's Theater, now presenting Harold and the Paper Crayon at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, the new home of the Chicago Children's Theater, 1016 North Dearborn, through November 4th. For information, 773-871-3000. Thursday nights are pizza party nights, and Friday nights are pajama party nights, so bring the kids either night and just have a great time. Or if they're real young, take them to a matinee, and they'll have a ball there. Our Jackie just does a terrific job. And finally, our good pal Michael McStraw, the executive director of Giordano Dance Chicago, now presenting their fall engagement, G-Force, at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, Friday, October 26th and Saturday, October 27th at 8, 205 East Randolph, Chicago's Millennium Park. For information, 312-334-7777. Michael's a very enthusiastic and passionate leader of Giordano Dance Chicago. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have at the very least done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes, I may not see forever.
be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose the music, the music.